A ban on intoxicating hemp products is scheduled to take effect in Ohio this month, but a new lawsuit wants to put the brakes on part of that ban as a signature-gathering effort aims to repeal the law completely. This is Cincinnati Edition on WVXU. I'm Lucy May. Joining me now to explain all this are Ohio Public Radio correspondent Sarah Donaldson, 50 West Brewing Company founder Bobby Slattery, and Urban Artifact co-founder Scotty Hunter. Welcome back, everybody.
Glad to be here. Thanks for having us.
Thanks for having me.
Sarah, hey, good morning.
Yeah. Sarah, briefly walk us through the history of these THC beverages. What made it possible for them to be made and sold in Ohio?
Of course. And I have to first amend my earlier statement and say good afternoon, because it is 12:07.
There you go.
Basically, in the last decade or so, there have been changes at the federal level that have enabled a lot of different businesses to start producing these hemp-derived beverages. I believe it was 2018, the federal farm bill kind of deregulated hemp. And so that's why you've seen a lot of these products, not just drinkable THC, but also gummies and different types of products on a lot of different shelves, not in traditional marijuana dispensaries that you've seen pop up in states that have legalized cannabis. So, you know, breweries and different bars have, you know, expanded into this industry. And you saw kind of a big question in the future of the industry at the end of last year, I want to say. So when federal lawmakers were negotiating to reopen the government, a ban on hemp, kind of re-regulating hemp, and closing what some say is a loophole in the law, got put into that bill. So at the state level, the state has kind of followed what the federal government has done. So when hemp was deregulated at the federal level, the state passed some laws to say, yeah, sure, you know, hemp farmers can start growing hemp and selling these products. And the law really did kind of allow for it. Now, of course, there's a lot of debate about some of these products are, of course, intoxicating. There's a difference between something that is like a CBD gummy that doesn't have an intoxicating portion to it. But lawmakers at the state level had been debating a ton of changes to both recreational cannabis law as well as hemp laws. And so that bill got passed shortly after that federal government loophole was closed. So that's a lot. I'm happy to tease through any of it, but that's kind of as I know it and why we're at this point.
Yeah. Well, I know Governor Mike DeWine had expressed concerns about intoxicating hemp generally. State lawmakers, as you mentioned, were working on legislation about all that. But when state lawmakers passed their legislation about intoxicating hemp, they didn't want to ban the beverages that have these THC beverages that our other guests' companies make. They had left those THC beverages out of the legislation they passed about intoxicating hemp, but the governor disagreed with that. So walk us through that piece of things, Sarah.
Yeah, absolutely. So lawmakers at the state level kind of put things into, I think, what I would say is three regulatory buckets. So there's cannabis and marijuana, which voters legalized in 2023, traditional Delta 9 THC that is being sold in dispensaries. So that's one regulatory bucket that's already kind of handled by issue one. And then you've got hemp products that lawmakers see as being sold at gas stations, the stuff that Governor DeWine is pointing to specifically when he's talking about, quote unquote, intoxicating hemp. So products, you know, I don't want to paint them with really broad strokes, but, you know, some of these products are designed to look like candy. There are not age restrictions on them, or there were not age restrictions on them until this state level ban passed. And then that third bucket were these drinkable THC products. A lot of those are being sold by breweries, by bars. They're being sold in gas stations and other places. Lawmakers, like you said, they wanted to ban the hemp within 90 days, but they wanted to leave room for beverages. So they passed a ban that was more in line with the federal ban, which goes into effect much later this year. So there was a ban to coincide with federal laws, but there was also language in the bill to say, like, if the federal government changes its mind, we're open to changing our mind too. But Governor DeWine said that he felt that was all too confusing and that these products also pose a risk. And so he line item vetoed that portion that gave beverages more leeway, more of a runway. He just argued that, you know, he doesn't really feel like science is there yet, that it does pose a risk, and he wanted all of it banned within 90 days. And the reason that the governor was able to do that, because this is at the heart of some of the argument of the lawsuit, is anytime a bill passes out of the Ohio legislature and it includes what's called an appropriation, so it includes money in it, the governor then is given the power that he can line item veto things. So that's why you see so many line item vetoes in the budget, because it's an appropriations bill. This big marijuana and hemp bill included money for local governments. It dispersed local government funds. So that's where that appropriation is coming from and why DeWine had the ability to issue that line item veto.
Well, Bobby and Scotty, your companies are now part of filing a lawsuit to try to stop that ban from taking effect, at least the ban on THC beverages. Which of you wants to kind of explain that lawsuit?
I'll probably.
Go ahead. You Bobby, start. Yeah.
you know, I think where I want to start with this lawsuit and this subject is the notion that DeWine has the ability to line item veto whenever an appropriation is in a bill. That's not what the Constitution says. The Constitution says the governor can line item veto an item of appropriation. So, you know, I think DeWine has promulgated this expertise and this ability to carte blanche line item veto bills in a way that everybody just accepted it. Now, that's not how we read the Constitution. There's case law that supports this, and that's what we're challenging our lawsuit, that the governor had just gross overreach. This is, you know, not an executive power that the people of Ohio had given him in the Constitution. And this goes back to the early 1900s, where there was a broader line item veto authority for the governor. And I think it was 1912 that the people came together and they said, hey, we need to put limits on this ability. And that's really the first part where the people said, hey, you work for us, you know, the legislative body and the executive branch, and we need to put limits on what you can do so that you don't overstep your bounds and that there are those checks and balances. So that is really the core piece of our argument here, is that he does not have that authority to just – because in that case, any bill that appropriates any money, the governor could – line and veto anything. And that basically means that he could line and veto almost anything, right? And that's not, you know, that's more, I don't want to be too extreme with my phrasing, but that's more like dictatorship than it is governor, right? He's not governing. He's just dictating what is allowable and what is not allowable when there's a clear intent from the legislatures in the House and the Senate to give a wind down period for beverages specifically.
Yeah, I think from our end, you know, we were very involved in the legislative process and getting that bill to his desk. We started that process probably around September, October, meeting with local representatives, meeting with state senators, and they all understood the beverage. It wasn't that beverages were necessarily left out. There was a specific beverage carve out that was written. Here's how this is supposed to go. So they understood when they were getting that bill to his desk. Had beverages not been a part of it, the bill would have never made it there. And I think that's what was frustrating for us, was we understood the intent of it. We understood how it was presented there. And then the governor sort of took liberties to say, well, because there's taxation in here, I'm going to fundamentally change the way this law is written, even though it has nothing to do with taxation in this instance. So it's an overreach is what we see. And that's where the heart of the lawsuit is.
We're talking about Ohio's ban on intoxicating hemp products and efforts to block all or part of the ban from taking effect. Do you have questions or comments? Give us a call at 513-419-7100, or you can email talk@wvxu.org. So, Bobby and Scotty, one at a time, what impact has all this had on your businesses? I mean, you thought you knew what was coming with this legislation that state lawmakers passed. The governor did something else. I mean, What has this meant? I'll start with you, Bobby, for your business.
Yeah, I mean, you know, because we were so involved in helping with that bill process, we saw it get passed through around Thanksgiving time. So you got to understand, we have lead times on our products and supply. So when we saw that come through, we understood, you know, we were going to have the federal law at the very least was going to go till the end of November. We also anticipate that
at the end of November of this year.
This year. We also anticipate that there's likely going to be changes to that law. And that was a big piece of the bill when it was getting hung up, was talking about, oh, what happens if this changes and how does that react? So in our specific instance, we have to order raw materials for, you know, the timeline that's ahead. And so we placed an order for several hundred thousands of dollars worth of raw materials to be set up so we could supply the consumers, hit the demand and whatnot. And then that just was cut off in no time. So we can't go back to those suppliers and say, hey, we need you to take our fruit back. We need you to take back those raw materials. So now we're stuck with that piece. The other hard part are just the jobs that are involved. This has been a major part of our business. And it's a major growth category. You're seeing a lot of consumers looking to just shift that lens a little bit in a different way. And so there's the job function. Now for us, you know, as of today, we have not made any hard layoffs, but you know, pending how this lawsuit comes out, the reality of it is it will have a dramatic effect on our business and our people that work for us, which is really, you know, that's why I'm here. That's why I'm fighting. You know, I want our people to know that we're doing everything we can, you know, to keep their jobs in place and to follow through with the intent of what the legislator put out. So, Scotty, you probably have similar.
Yeah. What's it been like at Urban Artifact, Scotty?
Yeah. I mean, the amount of time from an advocacy standpoint has been a lot, right? And Bobby alluded to it, right, and how much time he spent talking with lawmakers. And, you know, as craft brewers, we would do state house days and things like that for certain things that we, you know, wanted to see change that would give us more flexibility in the grand scheme of things. So, you know, that's been a large time sink, and that takes away from your ability to just focus on your business and operate. The other thing that Bobby alluded to that this bill does, it eliminates the ability to manufacture for out-of-state sale. So, you know, I've always viewed Ohio as priding itself on manufacturing jobs and having that growth and ability to manufacture, and that is cut off completely. You know, the Department of Cannabis Control has responded to brewers in the state saying that they will be charged criminally if they are in possession of these beverages post, you know, March 19th at midnight, criminally charged for just possessing these and not even with the intent to sell them in the state of Ohio. That is far, far, far too extreme. So to get back to your main question there, Lucy, is that, you know, we laid off our second shift. You know, we did co-packing for a number of other brands across the country. And, you know, we're able to shift a good bit of that production to some other beverage categories, but it doesn't mean it's not without bumps. And it was unfortunate that we had to lay off, you know, those five people from a production standpoint. We let off a sales rep that was out of state because we lost so much of, you know, that ability for that business. And it's that kind of forward looking, okay, if we can't get some sort of relief on this ban bill here in the next week, you know, the expectations change, at least in the short term.
We're going to continue this conversation after a short break. And later in the program, Governor DeWine pushes for long-term funding for the state's clean water program. This is Cincinnati Edition. You're listening to Cincinnati Edition on WVXU. I'm Lucy May. We're back with our conversation about Ohio's ban on intoxicating hemp products and efforts to block all or part of the ban from taking effect. My guests are Ohio Public Radio correspondent Sarah Donaldson, 50 West Brewing Company founder Bobby Slattery, and Urban Artifact co-founder Scotty Hunter. You can join the conversation by calling 513-419-7100, or you can email talk@wvxu.org. Sarah, I'm going to turn to you next. I should have said Ohio Public Radio, State House News Bureau. I didn't mean to cut your title short there. Sarah, there's also been this signature gathering effort underway that's related to this law to ban intoxicating hemp. Explain what's going on with that.
Yeah, so Ohio law allows citizens to circulate petitions after the legislature passes a law to repeal that law before it goes into effect. So the most recent successful repeal effort was Senate Bill 5 that was on collective bargaining. I could not tell you when Senate Bill 5 was overturned at this moment, but it's a challenging process because you have to get a lot of signatures in a very short period of time. So, of course, this bill goes into effect this week at the end of the week. So I am waiting to hear about the status of signature gathering. The last I heard from a spokesperson with the campaign was that yesterday, all of the volunteers who had been gathering signatures were turning petition booklets in. So there were businesses that were signed up to collect signatures. There were individuals who were signed up to collect signatures for a period of time. I know the campaign was paying signature gatherers. So we should have a better idea in the next day or so if those signatures are going to be submitted. I believe they have to be submitted to the Secretary of State's office by Thursday. If the law, or if this does make it onto the ballot, the law would be paused from going into effect because it would then go on the ballot and voters would be asked about how they feel about Senate Bill 56 and whether they feel it should stay in effect or be overturned. And my understanding is I'd have to go back through the specific provisions of the petition, but what would be overturned within Senate Bill 56 includes those hemp bans and also some criminality provisions.
And our associate producer looked it up, and it was 2011 was the last time that a bill was repealed at the ballot box. So thank you for referencing that, Sarah.
I don't want to date myself, but I was not here in 2011. No. But I do know that there have been a lot of efforts to do this. Of course, most recently with Senate Bill 1, that higher ed overhaul, and that group was not successful in actually making the ballot. So it's a high bar to cross. Mm-hmm. They have to gather, like, I think 248,000 valid signatures in a matter of weeks.
Scotty, what have you been hearing about this effort to gather these signatures? Do you think there will be enough valid signatures? And are your breweries places where people can sign these petitions?
Yeah, as Sarah mentioned, it is quite the process. A bill gets signed. You can then collect signatures to even file your petition. Then it has to get certified by the Secretary of State or in the AG. And that is when you can actually start collecting. So that 90-day window of a bill to go into effect usually ends up being only about 60 days. Mm. And not only do you have to get that 248,000 signatures, but you have to get 3% of the prior gubernatorial election in 44 of 88 counties. So there's a lot to it. And, it's been a strong effort, both, from a grassroots perspective as well as, contributions that have come in to pay for signature collecting. So we'll see. We're literally driving around collecting signatures every day, trying to get our heads around, okay, do we have enough to file? It's definitely going to come down to the wire on whether or not we're going to be able to file. It's a big arduous process, and the timeline's the biggest issue, right? Like you don't get any flexibility from that 90-day period. And that's the toughest part.
Yeah. And can people sign them at Urban Artifact or 50 West? Or do people have the ability to come in there and sign these petitions?
We didn't sign up given just how our business operates and some of the compliance aspects that were needed for it. It works a lot better for places that have like the same consistent staff there because you have to file certain forms. And I didn't want our people to mess it up and then just get a bunch of invalidated signatures. I don't know if Bobby, did you guys end up?
We were approached a few times. I mean, from our standpoint, we really liked Senate Bill 56, what we saw in that original bill. So most of our efforts have been focused on just going back to the politicians and saying, hey, you guys wrote a great bill. Let's follow through with that. So that's really where we focused our time and effort and our team.
Mm-hmm. Sarah, what have you been hearing from the people who worked to get adult use marijuana on the ballot in Ohio? You mentioned that issue, which passed, I think you said, in 2023. What do they think about this intoxicating hemp ban?
Well, you've got a bit of an industry turf war going on here, which I always feel like I have to tread lightly in saying, but there's frustration from the folks who lobby for and who work at licensed dispensaries who have had to go through a lot of rigmarole to even get set up. And so, you know, they are heavily, heavily regulated. They have cameras in their facilities that the Department of Commerce can tap into pretty much at any time. Just a lot of regulation there. So, you know, they lobbied very heavily for Senate Bill 56. They do not want to see Senate Bill 56 overturned. If you look at the group that got issue 2 on the ballot, that was that citizen-initiated statute that legalized recreational marijuana in Ohio in 2023. They were opposed to the repeal effort. The OCAN, which lobbies for cannabis dispensaries, they were opposed to the effort. There may be some individual dispensary owners who, again, because Senate Bill 56 is more than just the hemp ban. There are a lot of provisions in it. You do hear a lot of folks say that it's in a lot of industry folks say that it was in a better place when it got to that final point. But there are some provisions that you heard Democrats in the legislature very unhappy about, ways in which marijuana possession was recriminalized. Like, you can't have an edible in different packaging if you're transporting it in a car, very specific provisions like that, that there was some frustration with. But on the whole, I would say a lot of folks in the traditional cannabis industry do not want to see SB 56 repealed, because the hemp portion for them, they see unregulated intoxicating hemp as a safety issue, but they, you know, also see it as competing with the licensed dispensaries that are trying to find their footing in a very newly regulated market in Ohio.
Bobby, what do you think about that? Did that surprise you that so much of the cannabis industry was supportive of the ban? Like, get rid of this intoxicating?
No, I mean, I think they feel this is where it's really hard for us as a beverage. And Scotty and I have had long conversations about this over time because it's complex. I think that the from a cannabis side, I think they feel threatened from the gummies that were hemp derived, right? It cuts into their income stream. From our standpoint, you know, we make a beverage, and that was one of the big pieces that we talked about. And I think that's what, you know, in the General Assembly, what the representatives and the senators all saw was that these beverages at a certain low milligram make sense, and consumers are using those. And that's why they put that carve out in there and why it was so frustrating. For it just felt like when the governor took his actions, he didn't listen to any of the people that were involved in any of the process of the making. And that's where our lawsuit really comes from, is saying, hey, this was the intent of the bill. You can't fundamentally change a bill. You know, he fundamentally is changing a bill because there was taxation as it relates to how the marijuana money is supposed to come down to our local communities. It has nothing to do with THC hemp beverage. So, I mean, that's kind of where we stand on it.
Yeah. One thing I want to dispel, there is not a single state in this country where you can legally process hemp and it's not regulated. So the whole notion that these products are just grossly unregulated is nonsense. Like, anybody that's promulgating that has an angle and a business initiative mm-hmm. to say that. So that's just one thing that I want to try to dispel for everybody. This is a regulated industry. We test for our hemp products far more than our beer, right? The regulations are a laundry list. We have to spend $700-$800 on compliance per batch, which we don't have to spend on beer. Far more regulated. So it's not like we're just, you know, willy-nilly putting things together. You know, and the other thing with this too is full spectrum products, CBD products, farming extraction, those are all banned because of the way those rules are written. It is going to put farmers out of business. It is going to put therapeutics out of reach for everyday people, you know, from epilepsy and other sort of medical conditions. And this is not me giving medical advice. It's just knowing how people interact with these cannabis products. Those are not available at your dispensary. Like Bobby's mentioning, they don't want to carry our 5-milligram drinks. It doesn't make sense for them. They want to sell flower. They want to sell high milligram gummies. Like, they want to sell 50, 100 milligram beverages. This is just big business running roughshod over an industry that's not as well-funded and well-coalesced as them.
Well, Bobby, you mentioned that, you know, there's this stuff going on at the federal level, too, mm-hmm. that would, you know, you have until, I think, the end of November to work on some changes at the federal level. Is that still happening? Do you expect there to be a THC beverage carve out at the federal level before it's all over?
Yeah. So, I mean, I was just in D.C. 2 weeks ago talking to local representatives there. And yeah, I mean, I think I think as a country, what we're seeing is people are understanding these beverages and the occasion. When we first introduced our product, I don't know if we fully understood the beverage and the occasion, but slowly over time, what we saw is a lot of people that are using these products, they're either moving away from alcohol. It's a different customer than a person that wants a 50-100 milligram gummy. We do anticipate that there's going to be some movement there. There's several organizations that continue to go back. They're hearing the conversation. And you know, whether it, my hope is that at the end of this year, we figure something out. But I would say, it's very likely that 5 to 10 years from now, these beverages are going to play a major role in our country. And so it's just helping, you know, the legislators understand that. Scotty mentioned on the point regarding how these beverages are processed. That was a big thing for us at the state level. The messaging that was going to our representatives with these things were Wild West and there was no regulation. I think that's why they ultimately came to where they did on the beverage carve-out, was understanding that, hey, these guys that are making these things are actually held to a higher standard than we are even with alcohol. I mean, we make beer as well, and we're not held to anywhere close to the same testing standards. So yeah, I think good things will happen. It's just a matter of, you also remember these representatives, after they come out of the meeting with us and we explain THC beverage, the next person that walks in the door is talking about, you know, kindergarten funding for, so they, sure, they have a very long, so you have to really work with them to understand it. And I think that our politicians in Ohio did a good job of understanding that and presented a good bill at the end of the day. Yeah.
Well, and I think one point I want to add to that, Lucy, is I think something that's really been interesting to watch here, too, just when you're talking about regulation of cannabis and marijuana and hemp in general, is that this is a Republican majority legislature with a Republican governor who were generally, and I don't want to paint with very broad strokes, opposed to the legalization of recreational marijuana. Like, the governor was against issue two. Major Republican groups were against issue two. So when you see the governor move in a way that he has in line item, just, you know, kind of using a heavy hand in line item vetoing this beverage provision, for example, I'm not totally shocked, because Governor DeWine is not pro THC.
Mm-hmm. Well, I have been talking with 50 West Brewing Company founder Bobby Slattery and Urban Artifact co-founder Scotty Hunter. Thank you both so much for your time today.
Thank you.
Appreciate it.
Ohio Public Radio State House News Bureau correspondent Sarah Donaldson is going to stay with us to talk about Governor DeWine's push for long-term funding for the state's clean water program. That's coming up after a short break. This is Cincinnati Edition.